This is China Business Cast, your guide to doing business in the Wild Wild East. We're here to get detailed and get personal with experienced entrepreneurs making things happen in China. If you want to learn from on-the-ground accounts of how business actually gets done, this is the program for you. Hello and welcome to China Business Cast. I'm your host, JP. Today on the podcast, we'll be chatting with Todd Embley, the program director at China Accelerator, a mentorship-driven seed stage accelerator program based in Shanghai, China. China Accelerator is currently accepting applications for batch 6 of their accelerator program. So if you have an awesome startup, go to chinaaccelerator.com and apply before the Friday, July 18th midnight deadline. So without further ado, here's the show. Today's guest is Todd Embley, Program Director at China Accelerator, China's first mentorship-driven seed stage accelerator program. The Shanghai-based 90-day accelerator program is driven by the mission of helping entrepreneurs who are innovating at the cutting edge of information technology to create successful startups. It also claims to be China's only pure and authentic accelerator program. Today, we're here to discuss the tech accelerator and tech startup scene in China. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thanks, JP. Good to be here.
Fantastic. So as always, we keep the show quite tight. I have two specific goals for today. Goal number one is to understand the environment for tech accelerators in China and their role in shaping the Chinese startup ecosystem. And goal number two is to learn about some of the exciting startups that are, quote, innovating at the cutting edge of technology that are coming out of China Accelerator and also that you're keeping an eye on. How does that sound?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Perfect. So before we dig into the details, let's get some brief background. Can you give us a short overview of your China story? When and how did you first come to China?
I'll try to keep it short. I came out in 2007. I had just finished school, getting a bachelor's degree in business. And my father had just come back from a business trip in China. And we were chatting about China. And I said I was interested. And he said, well, I had met this guy whose sister teaches at a foreign languages university in Dalian. Have you thought about going there? And I said, well, you know, I just finished school and kind of broke. And he said, no worries, we'll help you out. And wanting to, you know, take advantage of the opportunity and the time that you have and go there and maybe study some Mandarin and check out the scene. So that's what I did. And that's where I went. I probably should have done my homework on schools and studying Mandarin in China, which I didn't really do. I took the relationship and the easy path to getting to China that was there and did that. So I can't say that I really enjoyed myself. It was tough. I was probably ill-prepared for living abroad, but I did meet a girl. As every good story has, there's always a heroine. And so that would be my now wife, Kate. And so we met, we started dating, and then the Canadian dollar was skyrocketing, and I wasn't enjoying it in Dalian as much as I thought I would. So I decided to go back, and she was going to follow, but then she couldn't get a visa into Canada, and whoever heard of not being able to get a visa to Canada. So I had to make a hard decision that was actually made easier by the economy diving in 2008. So I leveraged the economy and actually got my company to agree to let me out of my contract. And so I'd only been there 4 or 5 months, and yet I was able to get 2 months severance for walking away, which I wanted to do anyway, and move back to China. Then I met a guy on the street, just very happenstance, and got involved with an English magazine. Then after a few months, I invested in, bought 20% of it, and took over as president. 6 weeks later, the American guy was a 50-year-old gentleman who had a lot of printing experience from the U.S. He had taken all the money that I invested and spent it personally, bankrupted the company. So I erased his hard drive and put it on my own personal external hard drive, forcing him to have to come to me, which he did. We arranged to meet at the office, and I brought 8 of my Russian friends with me at the time. And told him he had 10 minutes to get any personal things that he wanted and get out of the office, and I never wanted to see him again. Then the next day, I held a meeting with the staff. They agreed to stay with me. I then went hunting for investment. So I found a few American guys who worked with Intel who were looking to do something, and so they invested $30,000. And then I found a Chinese guy who had the DM license to produce a magazine. We then continued, we moved the office and continued on, built a great product, became cash flow positive after 6 months, at which time the Chinese partner who was supposedly silent, started moving into the office and brought his lawyer and his accountant and basically said that he was going to take the company. He was taking 90%. He was going to leave 10% for everybody else to do as they wish, and that it was going to belong to him. And so we tried to fight him, but when he started sending threatening letters to our friends at Intel and causing distress for them in their careers, they had to get out of it quickly. And so they signed off on a non-liability agreement. And that pretty much sunk my ability to go after him. So then I lost it. So that was 2009. A heck of an experience, what I like to term my China MBA.
Wow, seriously, you do not get that kind of education in school for sure.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. So then I moved on and did some other things. I became the editor-in-chief of the competing magazine in the city. Then I went on to do another startup with a friend of mine in Canada in logistics, which basically taught me how much I disliked logistics. But that in the meantime, I had met a guy named Cyril Ebersweiler in Dalian. He was working for TBWA and helping launch eGraphics from Tokyo into China. So we would hang out, you know, drink beer, play video games, and our, you know, wives or girlfriends were becoming friends. And then he told me that he had been headhunted by SOS Ventures and was going to chart an accelerator in China, and would I like to come and mentor and give some of my experiences? And I said, sure. So I did that for a couple of batches. And then that led me to, you know, a full-time role with China Accelerator.
Fantastic. So, yeah, you've had, you know, a school of hard knocks education in business in China. And then eventually, you know, that experience led you to being a mentor and finally a program director at China Accelerator. That's quite a story, Todd. I actually never heard that before. I mean, all I knew was that you were from Canada and you run China Accelerator. I didn't know this whole side of the story. So thanks for sharing.
You're welcome. It's good. I mean, everybody has those trials and tribulations in their life and the hard paths and the failures, you know, that you learn everything from. So, you know, that's a drop in the bucket of, you know, just the last few years. But, you know, for all those out there listening that are going through tough times, trust me, it does get better.
Yep. And for all those at China Accelerator, you know, they can learn from your past experiences and hopefully avoid a few wrong turns as well.
I hope so. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, let's get into the meat of the program, which is to understand the environment for technology accelerators and startups in China. I found this very interesting. Right on the China Accelerator website, it says China Accelerator is China's only pure and authentic accelerator program. So yeah, let's start there. You know, how did China Accelerator come about and what is the problem that it's solving in the startup accelerator ecosystem in China?
So China Accelerator started when, like I said, Cyril had been headhunted by SOS Ventures. And what SOS Ventures wanted to do was they wanted to do early stage investment into tech in China or Asia, but China specifically. And so naturally, the conversation between the managing director of SOS, Sean O'Sullivan, and Cyril led them to explore options on how to reduce risk. And that's when the topic of accelerators came up, you know, so they thought, well, why don't we sink some money, you know, consider it a sunk cost, because the costs involved with running an accelerator all lead up to it being an evaluation of some of the best companies in which SOS can then further invest in and follow on from Series A, Series B, and so on. So Cyril then, you know, decided to take off. He became a mentor in residence at the Techstars in Boston during their spring 2010 cohort. Then he came back, designed up the office, and did all the renovations. It was a beautiful place. I miss it dearly because we're in Shanghai now. And off and running he went. And so far, so good. We've had a lot of excitement over what we've been doing here.
That's the origin of the China Accelerator program. What about the specific angle that, you know, it's approaching the problem of, you know, startup accelerators and the startup ecosystem in China?
Well, the startup ecosystem in China is something that I could probably talk about at length.
We have another 30 minutes maybe, so we'll have to compress it.
Yeah, see how we can get this size. I mean, one thing an accelerator is really great at is heightening the sense and knowledge of what I term entre philosophy. Okay. And this is just a mindset. It's a being. It's this soul of being a good entrepreneur and trying to wade through all the crap and all the noise that's out there, from TED Talks to, you know, podcasts to articles and things like TechCrunch and everything that's out there that is always bombarding you with great information can kind of make the water muddy for those who are just starting out. So what the accelerator does is helps you focus on what's important and gives you the best mentorship, which is known throughout the industry to be one of the most important things to have, but one of the most difficult things to get. The access to expert knowledge, whether it's in an industry or a space or just about entrepreneurship, to find those people that have been entrepreneurs, built companies, raised money, hired staff, overcome challenges and problems, gotten to a point where somebody might be interested in an acquisition, a merger, or whether you want to go IPO, to understand all of that, including the legalities involved, and then to experience an exit, some sort of liquidity event at the end of it, and then to turn around and potentially, you know, and quite often we see them turn into VCs or angels, and to come full circle back around to be these amazing mentors. And one of the most wonderful things about mentors in our industry is that they're so philanthropic. They're willing to donate their time for reasons that still baffle me, and how many hours they will give to mentoring startups. And I'm sure there's, you know, it's for deal flow and they love the energy and they want to stay on top of what's, you know, cutting edge and being created out there. They gain so much from it just in those areas that they're so good about lending their time. They're amazing. That's kind of the most important thing early on, is to get that great mentorship. So, you know, what Cyril did in the beginning was go out and talk to people about what he wanted to do and get buy-in from as many of these kinds of mentors as possible that were, you know, in China and involved in the startup scene, and attract them to being a part of what we were trying to do at China Accelerator. And the work he did to do that is amazing. And it's a lot of work. It was really, you know, an amazing amount of things that he had to do, and the travel and everything that he put into bringing this group together. And that is the core of what we're doing. We're not in it to fund startups with money. Money is everywhere in China. As I said, I could go on and on about the startup, you know, ecosystem here and what people are doing. And one of the fallacies that I think is happening in China is that there's a gross overfunding. Let me put it this way. If China, in its goal to become more innovative, wants to create more entrepreneurs, but then we kind of look at the other side of things, what we know about what makes great entrepreneurs, and a lot of it is through the school of hard knocks and hustle. You know, the machine of failure is what needs to be, you know, running smoothly. In China, when they're being funded, they're, you know, up against the wall, their backs against the wall as far as having to meet milestones and having to put products out quickly and to quickly iterate and to work on customer acquisition and to do more with less and to follow lean startup principles. Without this kind of pressure and this repetitive failing, you know, learning and then iterating and doing it again, you know, the overfunding is extending the runway. So if China actually wants to improve innovation or create more entrepreneurs and a better environment for entrepreneurs, they need to stop overfunding and they need to start over mentoring and bringing and encouraging more and more people to come in and actually work with them and help understand how to build a company, not just give them a whole bunch of money and then stand back and wait and hope that that solves the problem. Because if you extend their runway, they're not failing. They're failing at a slower rate. And if they're failing at a slower rate, they're not learning as much. So you're actually getting in your own way. You're not speeding up the machine that's churning out great entrepreneurs. You're actually slowing it down by overfunding.
That's a great point. And I think I see that as a philosophical, you know, differentiator for China Accelerator, which is focusing on, you know, the mentors and the methodology of startups versus, yeah, a lot of these Chinese incubators or whatever programs, you know, it's government funded, there's a lot of money, and it becomes like a game of jumping through hoops, right? People like put together an application, get some money. Sometimes they're not even that serious about the idea that they're pursuing. They're just doing it because they can. and they get the money and they sort of sit on it and, you know, squander it almost. I've heard just from conversations that that is something that's quite prevalent in the general, like, you know, funding or like startup programs and things like that that happen in China.
It's tough. It's tough all around in China. I mean,
yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, what do you see as being tough for specifically in China for startups and also maybe for, you know, running accelerator? What's different? What's tough?
Well, let's go all the way back to childhood. Okay. And the way that Chinese are raised, don't get me wrong, I love being in China. I think this is the greatest place to be. And I love all my Chinese friends. It's just been the most amazing place to be. I don't want to come across as negative because I've enjoyed everything good that's happened to me in my life has happened by being in China. And I'm thoroughly thankful and grateful for everything that this amazing, creative, growing world beater that is China has been doing. That said, just typically, parents, the way they raise their kids, they're not exactly raising entrepreneurs because what they're doing is they're removing the opportunity to make choices. And through making bad choices is how we learn our lessons. When we fall down and we scrape our knee, then we learn, well, we should be more careful, or we shouldn't have done it that way, or we shouldn't have tried to do too, you know, I mean, this is how it is. Now, for me, coming from Canada, I had my first job when I was 8 years old. You know, I really wanted to buy this awesome, cool BMX bike, and I had to go out and make my own money. My dad was going to match me, but I had to make half the money. And I did that when I was 8 years old, one spring, taking care of my neighbor's lawn and yard while they were gone. And in high school, you know, I delivered pizza. I worked at a golf driving range. Of course, I did dishes. I was a waiter. I delivered newspapers. I did babysitting. I did all kinds of things. Even before I graduated high school, I learned the value of a dollar. I learned to have a boss. I learned to work in a team. I learned time management of just showing up on time. I learned how to get fired. You know, I learned how to be downsized. There was a million things that I was learning about the world around me and all the mistakes that I was making. I was learning, learning, learning. I wasn't being afraid anymore. I wasn't afraid to have a job. I wasn't afraid of all these things. I was overcoming all my fears. And I think parents are kind of over-controlling their kids and not allowing them the freedom to make choices. And so typically a child comes out of university, they haven't had to worry about anything in their life. They haven't made a choice up until that point. And now they're left with no knowledge of the world, a limited understanding of what they were taught in school. And now they want to be an entrepreneur, but they don't understand. They've never had pain. And without understanding and intrinsically knowing and having had that freezing fear of a pain point, how can you actually go and solve something? How do you even understand a pain point well enough to go and make a solution for people? So it's very, very difficult. And so I think entrepreneurs in general here just tend to be a little more naive. There's a lot of things out there that you can read and listen to, like these great podcasts, but that can only take you so far until you actually dive into the pool and start trying to do it for yourself.
I was raised partly in China. I went to elementary school here, but most of my education I received actually in Canada as well. And yeah, I think it's that everything is a well-charted path, right? For Chinese people, it's, you know, study hard, get good grades, and then get into a good high school, and then do the Gaokao, which is the, you know, national test, and get into a good university. There's not a lot, like you said, there's not a lot of sort of independent choices to make along the way. I think even most extracurricular activities are chosen for the kids, right? Like, you're going to do ballet and violin and piano, and then, like, that's it.
That's right. And, yeah. And if you take that back to what I said about how important mentorship is, well, where do the great mentors come from? As I alluded to, they come from those who have been previously in their lives great entrepreneurs. Now what we see is there's kind of this crossroads of well, all we have to offer you is money because we don't have an amazing amount, a big wealth of mentors who truly know what entrepreneurship is like. What we do have is a lot of rich people who have a lot of money who, let's be a little bit honest, they didn't exactly make it through being an amazing business person in a free market economy. Okay.
Right,
there was probably a lot of guanxi and a lot of other factors that led into it. You know, where do we find this amazing pool of mentorship here in China if we've actually never raised good entrepreneurs to begin with that now know how to work the system and how to be a great entrepreneur? You know, it's a rock and a hard place.
So how does China Accelerator solve that problem. I know quite a few of the mentors are also international, right?
Yeah. Again, I mean, it's not ideal, but you know, we're trying to find the best that we can. There's a lot of pure investors out there that parade as mentors, not having been an entrepreneur in their past. How much can they actually contribute to putting themselves in your shoes and telling you how you should be and what you should do? They can tell you what investors look for. They can tell you, this is how I like to see a pitch deck. These are the numbers that I expect you to have if you're going to make me interested to give you money. There's this kind of knowledge that they can pass on to you at a later stage when you're ready to raise some serious financing. But early on, it's tough. So we find that the international mentors that are now here, and it's great because if they're even in China, you know they're great cowboys. You know they're adventurers because they're here. They've chosen a land that is traditionally very difficult to assimilate into, and yet they've chosen the difficult path and come here and are trying to make it. And that, again, just correlates with our belief in the fact that these guys make great mentors and they're great adventurers and they know how to challenge themselves. You know, that's the way it is right now. I mean, we would love to have more and more great mentors that are local, but there's just not as many of them out there. And maybe we need to celebritize people like Lei Jun or Jack Ma. We need more of them to rise up and be celebritized so that parents will actually agree to let their children be entrepreneurs without forcing them to go take that job with the big real estate company or with the bank or with, you know, the big internet company because it's safe.
Right. I mean, the safest job and most coveted is 公务员, which literally means government employee, right? Every job that opens up, it has like tens of thousands of applicants. It's a very risk-averse society.
But I get it. Yeah. I get it and I respect it because you look at the tumultuous past that China has had, okay? I think everything that, you know, 20, 30 something Chinese parents have gone through, you can understand why they are, you know, wanting to play it safe. You know, they put all their work into their kids to give them a great education so they can get that good job and a very secure job because that's very much on their mind right now. Of what they went through when they were young and how often things changed. And they thought, you know what? Get that education because, you know, the whole landscape can change in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have Chinese parents and I would say they're a little bit more sort of modern and forward thinking, but we've had discussions like this when I quit my job to, you know, become an entrepreneur as well. So I feel that very much.
Yeah, even minded.
Yeah. So we talked about some of the maybe challenges to overcome. Is there anything in China that you feel like gives entrepreneurs an edge?
I think in the local environment, they definitely have an edge. And just the cultural barrier is huge. It still gives them a tremendous advantage in the China market. Globally, they're perhaps at a bit of a disadvantage. You know, China is a bit of an island unto itself in the world. It's a very unique place. It's really hard, as we have seen in the news many, many times over the years, it is really hard to build both a successful company in China and that's also global, or a global American or European company that's also large in China. Very, very, very difficult. You know, I mean, you know, Alibaba's trying to get there. Baidu may get there and Tencent trying really hard. I personally would love to see WeChat take over and, you know, take over Facebook, mostly because that's where I spend most of my time now. And I'm almost never on Facebook anymore, but it's really, really hard to do both. Some are getting it. Some, I think, you know, the nut will be cracked soon. But that cultural barrier, and I mean, it's something that we found even in the accelerator program coming out. If you don't have a Chinese co-founder at the minimum, either CEO or CTO, you're not going to get any response, or you're not going to get any money from renminbi funds if you're trying to raise money. It's just not going to happen. Conversely, that gives the Chinese startups a leg up because, as we know in investing, that it's a very emotional thing. Investors, at the end of the day, generally have to like the founders because you're going to be working together for 5 to 7 years. You're getting into bed together. You're getting married, however you want to put it. And you generally have to have an appreciation and a like for each other because you're going to be working together for hopefully quite a long time. And that has to be there. And if there's a large cultural gap, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult for you to understand, you know, and communicate well. So I think that generally speaking, the renminbi funds and investors are a little bit wary of getting involved with a pure foreign team. So again, gives an advantage to the Chinese.
Yeah, that's a good point because One of the advantages is that China is such a large market that a very, very localized product is going to, you know, find a large enough market versus something like Korea, right? If it's just localized to Korea, there's only a very limited population there, which is why everything Korea is very internationally minded when they design it. But that is a bit of an advantage to the local Chinese entrepreneurs.
Yeah. You know, and there's some monopolies and things at play that, you know, like, you know, games publishing and things in China that you could potentially take advantage of. You know, we're still waiting for some really great Chinese game development studios or companies to come out and come anywhere close to what the Koreans are doing. But if they can, they've got a real shot at dominating some of the market here. There are, you know, potentials, especially, you know, even with the telecom companies who kind of monopolize the entire market here, there's options. If you're the best, you've got a real chance of being huge.
Yeah. So with that, let's talk about industries that you think are interesting in China. I know gaming is huge. It's a very, very lucrative industry and it has a lot of money in it. What are some of the other industries that you see as holding a lot of potential for creating valuable startups?
Well, I think some of the more interesting things, you know, are probably coming from hardware. You know, trying to leverage the local infrastructure of what has made China great, and that's a lot of manufacturing hardware-related stuff. China also has some very interesting logistics. And funny enough, as much as I disliked logistics before, I find so many of the logistics and the way things work here, and especially they've really taken off with payments, mobile payments, where it's TenPay or Alipay and these kind of things, I think tremendous opportunities there. I really think that there's a lot that the Chinese can do in robotics and augmented reality, I think, is really, really cool. I've met some very interesting companies that are doing some cool things with augmented reality here. And I think there's potentially a great play there. But, you know, hardware, robotics, quadcopters, things like that are very interesting.
Cool. Yeah. Mentioning payments, I recently integrated WeChat payments. And the user experience is very, very smooth. I can charge my phone's credit in like under 15 seconds, and it's crazy. And I was buying something online from an e-commerce store. It's also owned by Tencent, who owns WeChat. It's called Yixun, kind of a competitor to JD, Jingdong.com. And there's a scan a QR code to pay now. So, you know, there's a QR code, you take out your WeChat, you scan it, enter a password, you paid within 15 seconds. Yeah, I think WeChat and mobile payments, they're going to take it very far.
I think the one last industry that I think is very, very interesting. So I have a bit of a stance on kind of green tech and clean tech. I'm still not convinced that the population of the world actually is aware enough of the damage that we're doing to the world, that people still want to kill Mother Earth for some reason. I don't get it, but they still want to, using oil and the rest of it. So what I'm more interested in actually is efficiency technologies, especially when it comes to farming, food production, and transportation thereof, doing more things in real time, being able to analyze crops to better seed, soil, water, fertilize, pick, you know, and sort and then transport in real time. We're definitely on the cusp of a world food shortage coming up. And just in China alone, 30% of crops are dying in the fields just because that they are not being scheduled properly in the way that they're grown, and they're not actually getting to market in time. The logistics and the whole ecosystem of how agriculture works, is there's a tremendous gap there from what is and what could be in reducing spoilage and making a much more efficient, you know, economy of agriculture here in China. I think there's huge potential there.
Hard to argue with that. So with that, let's jump into even more details, you know, than just industries. Let's talk about specific companies. You know, the archetypical startup accelerator would be, you know, Y Combinator. They've been at it for a long time and they had some huge successes like Airbnb and Dropbox and things like that. Can you share some highlights of companies that have gone through or is going through China Accelerator that you're excited about?
Companies that I'm excited about that have been through China Accelerator, you know, and bear in mind, when I want to talk about it, have we had any exits yet? Not yet. And there's good reason. Now, I can't say who, but there actually is an acquisition on the table that's probably going to be happening. And we're hoping to release that information in the next month. And we're pretty excited about it. Very cool. So there was actually a new fund that was launched in Texas in last year. They're called Cowboy Ventures. And what they did was a big study of all the investing and all the companies and all the startups and everything that had been around from 10-year period between 2003 and 2013. And a few things that I found very interesting. One,
is it the unicorn study? Is that what they called it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've read that.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, you read that, right? So, I mean, some very interesting takeaways of where the better performing startups were actually started by 30-somethings, not 20-somethings. Okay, very interesting. And it goes against, you know, the urban myth that you have to be super young to start a company, that you can't do it when you're in your 30s. You're too old. That's bull. The second one was that non-tech were on average performing better than tech, which I think is interesting because, you know, if you're anywhere near Silicon Valley, you're not sexy if you're not a tech startup. That's an unfortunate label because they actually perform better. The third thing was that the average age of a company that experiences a liquidity event is 7 years old. And I think that is something very important for listeners and entrepreneurs to know, is that you're not going to be in and out in 2.5 years and on a yacht, you know, partying like Pitbull. it's not going to happen. It's going to take a long time and a lot of hard work on average. So keep that in mind. Great thing about the China Accelerator is that we reality check them early and often so that they understand exactly what they've gotten themselves into. Some of the companies, you know, so we've about 3.5 years old. We've had four batches. We did those four batches inside of 3 calendar years. You know, all of these are about 3.5 years old to 4 years old so far. So obviously Order With Me, very, very, you know, famous graduate of China Accelerator. They won TechCrunch Disrupt in Beijing in 2011. They just raised their Series B, doing very well. We love PictoChart, our girls from Malaysia. It's an infographic platform that is something that we use all the time. If anybody is following us at China Accelerator on WeChat or otherwise, you'll be seeing that we're starting to put out a lot more infographics that we hope are a nice, easy to read, quick learning experience for entrepreneurs. Who else we got? Well, Alien is a company that is still kind of in stealth. They're just super brilliant. They're from Tehran, living in Canada now. They're working on some amazing newsreader aggregated, you know, type of forum stuff that is absolute genius, but takes years of programming to get right. They're actually still in beta, but we're obviously very excited about them. eProf and Trevor Kverko, obviously doing very, very well, raised money. He's killing it over there. In the last batch, we had a few successes already. SplitForce, A/B testing for mobile. Zach came in, consummate entrepreneur, hardworking, hustle, great guy, very humble, knew how to communicate and approach mentors, and was just an amazing guy. And he ate up everything that we threw at him. And he was purpose-driven, not profit-driven. And he's killing it because of that. And he's been able to attract great talent to join his team, which is just a make of his personality and who he is as a person. Love him, love what they're doing. They've raised funds since the program, doing very well. Launch Pilots, another one. Logo from Hong Kong, now in Shenzhen. Jia Ying, amazing CEO. She's unbelievable. One of the most adept 22-year-old entrepreneurs I've ever met. She's incredible. Great platform for bringing brands and student event organizers together. Doing very well. Also, she's already raised her Series A. Great girl. Love her to death. Cedar, another platform, green building technology designers and construction companies, bringing them together for building a more sustainable world. He actually went from China Accelerator into Startup Chile and actually has just returned to China. You know, very proud of him as well and everything that he's been doing. Yeah, I mean, there's more, but you know, those guys are pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a fantastic list. I'm going to definitely link up to those in the show notes. So I got some work to do to Google around and find all those companies. I would love to, I think in maybe a future podcast, talk to some of those companies as well to see, you know, how they're doing after China Accelerator and how things are going for, especially if they've, you know, stayed in China and sort of focused on the Chinese market.
Good idea. I can link you up.
Fantastic. Cool. So what about this batch? This is batch number 5 and the first one in Shanghai. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. We just relocated. Oh, things are going great. Being in Shanghai has been amazing. What a great city.
We really, really love it here. An amazing scene, great startup scene. You know, there's so many things going on. Obviously, a very international city. And, you know, talking about China being an island unto the world, I think Shanghai is almost an island unto China. It's incredibly international and expensive. But, you know, it's still a lot of fun being here. So in-house, we have some great teams. I would highlight the three teams I would highlight right off the top are Neonan, neonan.com. Probably a lot of you out there know of it or have heard of it. They're the number one men's health platform by users and monthly visitors. They've been around for a couple of years. They've made some pivots. They've made some mistakes. They've had some challenges that they've had to face. They've lost a founder or two along the way who decided to go in different directions. But Mike and Willie, who are here, have done an amazing job. Man, those guys are on point. They talk the talk. They walk the talk. They measure everything. And they run a very, very tight ship. And they produce an incredible amount of amazing content. Love having those guys in here. So we brought Shoe Lovers. Shoe Lovers actually came to us from Mexico City, and they had graduated 500 startups in Mexico City and then came over here. They have had 250,000 downloads of their app. They are about to crack 10 million fans on Facebook. Again, just amazing guys on point, know their stuff. They measure everything and know what to look for, and they eat up entrepreneurship. Everything we throw at them, they're in. We do workshops. We bring in mentors. We have sessions. We do webinars. They are there asking questions, actively participating in everything, and they're eating up the entire experience, and they're go-getters. And I love that about them. The other team would be Daily Themes, helping ESL students write better. And you can go to Daily Theme, dailytheme.es, dailythemes.com as well. Great platform. Since they've come in, they've gone from 1,000 users to over 7,000 users, and you get expert feedback, and you're encouraged to just write something small every day, and you will get expert feedback on any number of things when it comes to writing well in English. There's a lot of things that help you learn English, help you practice English, become better orally or spell better. But actually being a good writer, which can help you, especially if you're looking for international jobs, very, very effective tool. Great guys, came to us from Philadelphia.
Very cool. And we'll definitely link up to those in the show notes as well. So it's been a great discussion, and we're coming up to the end of the chat. But before I let you go, just two final questions before we sign off. Can you tell us a bit more about your biggest current focus at China Accelerator?
It's definitely on helping build better entrepreneurs. It's about giving them the tools to succeed. They're all family members. And everybody that's been through China Accelerator is an alumni, okay? We're in this for the long haul. We're not just with you during the program. We're with you forever. And we're doing everything we can to make you a better entrepreneur. There's a million things in this world that might kill your idea. Competition, economy, you name it. It could be anything. But by giving these entrepreneurs the best skills and the best knowledge and the best network to utilize going forward, if not this idea becomes a huge success, we believe because they're talented and they work hard and they're great people, that giving them the opportunities to be successful, by giving them the tools to be successful, that even down the road, they will build something great. And as far as, you know, China Accelerator and SOS Ventures and our partners are concerned, we're hoping to get an invitation to the table when they do want to raise money and they do something great. So we're building relationships that will hopefully last a lifetime, and we're helping build better entrepreneurs.
Sounds like a great mission. Finally, can you leave the audience with any final message that you may have and let them know how they can connect with you?
I would say the final message I have is to, you know, be purpose-driven, not profit-driven. Really try to find that overarching goal of what in the world you want to solve. You know, be focused on solving the pain point, however the market tells you that they want it, in whatever way they want it, how they want it delivered to you, on whatever platform they want it delivered, and however much they're going to pay for it. Let them tell you. You don't care, because you have no ego attachment to the product or the solution. You only care that the pain is solved. And if you do that, then it will help you make the right choices when you're measuring the data and surveying your customers and talking to your clients. That's going to help keep you focused. When things start to get murky and you have all this, you know, conflicting data, as long as you choose the path that helps you achieve that goal that you have the most passion for, that's going to set you on the right path. I'll leave it at that.
Fantastic. And if the audience wanted to follow along and see what China Accelerator is up to, how can they connect?
So it's ChinaAccelerator.com. On Weibo, it's at Zhongguo Jiasu. At China Accelerator on Instagram, on Twitter, on Tumblr, on everywhere that you can possibly imagine, it is at China Accelerator. And we're always pumping out great content, hoping that everybody out there enjoys it.
Fantastic. We'll link up to those in the show notes also. So thank you very much for being a guest on the show, Todd.
Thank you, JP. It's been a pleasure. And good luck, everybody out there. Any questions you might have, feel free to ping us on the social medias, and we'll be sure to link up and put you on the right path.
Cheers. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of China Business Cast. Head over to ChinaBusinessCast.com and enter your email to get on the list. I'll announce guests before I interview them, and you'll get a chance to submit your question for the show. Till next time, thank you for listening.